We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
My personality was to blame.
What the call is that?
I was not afraid to say what was on my mind.
Boomer Esiason.
Esiason, wide open is Brooks. Boomer just threw that football up like it was on a hanger.
Host of Boomer and Geo, mornings on WFAN.
Why don't you just announce it on WFAN?
1988 NFL MVP.
The Cincinnati Bengals AFC champion.
NFL All-Pro and four-time Pro Bowler.
Esiason, the talk of Cincinnati.
Our very own Monday afternoon quarterback.
When it gets there, it is as satisfying as anything in life. The forward pass is like the greatest lovemaking you've ever been a part of.
Boomer Esiason with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Every Monday at 3 during the football season, Boomer Esiason from the NFL Today at CBS and WFAN in New York joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. It's a built Ford Tough Bears Monday. Boom, as always, we appreciate the time, man. Can you talk Bears fans off the ledge about Mitch Trubisky?
Yeah, I can, but I feel like I've spoken to you guys like a month ago, right? Doesn't it feel like it was like 30, 40 days ago?
Boomer, it was the longest wait between Bears regular season games I can remember because of how bad it went against Green Bay, and we're gnashing teeth again today, all day on the radio station. Because, well, they did muscle out a touchdown yesterday, but God, the training wheels.
Progress.
Yeah.
You know, it's a win. A win is a win, man. It is hard to win in the NFL. Every coach will tell you that. Every player will tell you that. And, you know, I watched this game intently yesterday because I wanted to see how Matt Nagy was going to handle Mitch Trubisky. I wanted to see if he was going to take the training wheels off and let him play. But I also know that they're worried, you know, that they're not happy with where he is in his development yet. They won't say that, but I can see that how they're calling the game. And I see that they're trying to protect him. And I understand why they tried to do that, especially on the road in Denver, because that is a very difficult place to play, especially early in the season. And with those two pass rushes on the end of those, the offensive line, I told you guys the last time I was on with you, I really thought their offensive line played terribly against the Green Bay Packers. I thought they had a lot of problems in pass protection. It's a little bit better in this particular game, but I think the reason for that was because of the conservative nature of the game plan. So they came away with a win, and they found themselves a kicker. They got a great punter. They played great field position, and they have a Super Bowl defense. And as the season now progresses, it's going to be whether or not Mitch Trubisky can, you know, get out of this malaise and kind of grow into a real NFL quarterback where the team can count on him to win a game for them.
What does it do to an NFL quarterback's confidence when it's obvious to even schlubs like me that his coach is game planning around him?
Well, first of all, I don't work with schlubs, so don't give yourself that kind of credit. Okay,
I appreciate that.
Okay, good. I would just, you know, watching it, and I'm sitting there watching it with Coach Cower and of course Phil Sims and Nate Burleson yesterday, and we were talking about Mitchell and about his lack of progress, it looks like, thus far this season. I also felt like he was a guy that should have played 100 plays in preseason. I don't care. He's indestructible. He's a kid. He's 23 years old. You know, he hasn't played a lot of football. You know, he only started 1 year at North Carolina. You know all the story behind this.
Yep.
And I understand that they realize that he's probably limited in terms of, you know, what he's able to comprehend during a football game, especially on the road against a good defense and against Vic Fangio, because Vic Fangio knows Mitchell Trubisky about as well as anybody does from being there with him the last couple of years. So they were conservative. There's no question about it. This all fell on their defense and also on their kicking game. And also they got a little bit lucky there with the penalty against Nick Chubb with their last series. So, you know, this week they go to Washington. I think they got to be more aggressive offensively. They've got to build his confidence up. If you want to win in this league, the guy that stands behind center has got to look like the guys that win on every, you know, kind of consistent weekend. And that is, you know, when I think of it, it's really Patrick Mahomes. He looks relaxed. He looks like he's playing touch football with his buddies out in the backyard, and he doesn't have a care in the world, and he throws the ball, and he pulls the trigger. And the interesting thing about that, and the reason that I compare him to Patrick Mahomes because they were in the same draft class, but more importantly, they're playing in essentially the same offense, because that's where Matt Nagy came from. But the offenses look completely different because Patrick is the quarterback and he's playing so well.
When we talk about Mitch Trubisky, confidence is always something that enters the conversation. And last week at his regular Wednesday news conference, he shared with Bears media, he's no longer going to be talking about the previous week's play because it's on to the next game. And he said a staffer or two suggested that to him. Kind of ridiculous. You're so afraid of this guy's confidence being shaken that somebody in the staff, we think PR assistants, are telling him, forget about it. Don't relive it if it's bad.
Well, I think Tom Brady does it every week. He'll talk about the game after the game, and he'll talk about it maybe Monday night on Westwood One halftime with Jim Gray. And then after that, they don't even talk about games that they just played. They move forward. So this could have come from a staffer. It could have come from a coach. It could have come from somebody in his life. It could have come from his agent. It could have come from anybody. And I would say that is sound advice. I know it sounds ridiculous in the world that we live in because we're media-driven. We need to hear what these guys are thinking, especially if they're going to be criticized, and we want to get some sort of reaction from them. But really it is. You know, when Bill Belichick a few years ago, after they got killed by Kansas City, said in the post-game press conference, on to Cincinnati, we all made fun of it. But when you think about it, it's a very simplistic way of looking at it in a very complex world that we live in. And I would say that Mitch Trubisky should turn off his phone, shouldn't look at any social media, and should just focus in now on the Washington Redskins. And it's up to Matt Nagy to put him in a situation where, you know, he can actually now show that he's ready to take the reins on as a full-time NFL quarterback that is not holding his team back. And this is part of, I always say this, the maturation aspect of all of us quarterbacks that have been through it. With the praise comes the criticism. With the pressure comes the money. And right now I think Bears fans are probably a little bit perturbed at the way the offense looks. But I think this week is a time where you got to go out there and say, you know what, this is Mitch Trubisky's game. Now, you don't say that publicly. You may say that internally and say, let's give him some more opportunities. Let's see what he can do. Let's put a little bit more on his plate and hopefully get his confidence going. That's how I would handle it.
Boomer, can you win in 2019 the way the Ravens did in 2001 or the year before with Trent Dilfer?
I don't think so. I think it's, you know, I would say that the Patriots kind of did that last year a little bit, at least in the Super Bowl they did it, because they held down the Rams and Tom didn't have a great game offensively. Wade Phillips had a great defensive game plan against the Patriots. But when I look at the Patriots now, who are, you know, is the team that everybody's shooting for, what I see is a team that now all of a sudden is built on defense, and it's built on athletic defense, meaning you have a ton of defensive backs that can run all over the place. And I think the reason for that is because Belichick has always been ahead of the curve. He recognizes that if he wants to get out of the AFC first and foremost, he better have the athletes on the back end that can stay with the Kansas City Chiefs. The same thing could be said, I think, for the Rams if you play against them, or when they are healthy down in New Orleans with Drew Brees. It looks like he's going to be out for about 6 weeks. And even with Aaron Rodgers, when he figures this whole thing out, I just think that you have to be able to complete passes, you have to be able to throw the ball down the field, and you have to have explosive plays. You know, just watching Kansas City yesterday, I mean, I think at one point in time, Mahomes had 5 straight passes of over 30 yards completed. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Preposterous.
And that's where the league is going. And then when you think of like what Kyler Murray's doing his rookie year and what Lamar Jackson did yesterday, man, you got to put up points if you want to win in this league. And that all comes back to the quarterback.
We're talking to Boomer Esiason, which we will every Monday after Bears games. McNeil and Parkins on the Score. Well, and that's where Bears fans are right now, because they want him to be Pat Mahomes, but I think most of us are resigned to, okay, that's not going to happen, but they just need him to be average with this defense and the special teams that you mentioned earlier. My question to you is, what is still in play? Like, what is Mitch Trubisky's ceiling still, even after what we've seen through his first 30 games or whatever?
Well, after the last 2 games, the ceiling's a hell of a lot higher, I can tell you that. And the coaches have got to help. There's no question about that. But, you know, I understood yesterday's game plan, and Coach Cowher told it to me perfectly. He goes, Boomer, you're in Denver. How many times did you play there? I said, 4 or 5. Did you ever win? I said, no. What ended up happening when you were there? I said, I don't know. I got my ass kicked and I threw interceptions. He goes, yeah. Well, I know exactly what Matt Nagy's doing here. He is trying to limit the amount of decisions that Mitch has to make against a fearsome pass rush and a very loud, boisterous crowd. And I would be doing the same thing, especially with the defense that the Bears have. So he played right into what Coach Cower would have done himself if he were in that same situation with that quarterback. Now, next week, that's a totally different story. The Redskins aren't nearly as good. They're good, but they're not nearly as good as the two teams that they just played. So I would think that this would be the game where you now have to kind of take the training wheels off, and you got to test your quarterback. You know, if you lose a couple games early in the season, I get it. This defense is a Super Bowl defense. As long as they stay healthy, with the way Roquan Smith is playing, with the way that Danny Trevathan is playing, with the way that the secondary is playing, Eddie Jackson is playing, I mean, this is ridiculous how good they are. So you can take some chances against some teams that you should be able to beat and take those chances by putting the ball in the quarterback's hand and making him throw the ball. I would be surprised if next week they don't come out and try to throw the ball where he throws for at least 250 to 300 yards. And I know I don't want Bears fans to, you know, drive off the road as I say this, but I would think that this would be the game to try that.
Boomer, last year, following the second week of the season, unless you just love to see the Green Bay Packers lose, everybody was up in arms over a roughing the passer call against Clay Matthews that cost the Vikings a game. You mentioned the one on Chubb yesterday in Denver. We thought all of the roughing the passer calls were bad calls in that game. Did you agree with any of those calls that you saw?
I didn't, especially the one at the end. Imagine if that were Roquan Smith or that were Khalil Mack hitting Joe Flacco. And having happened to you, what happened to the Denver Broncos and their fans? How ticked off would you be today? You'd be livid. So that is a break that comes the way of the Chicago Bears, and they made the most of it, and they took advantage of it, and they find themselves a kicker, a money kicker for that matter. So I don't like the way some of these calls have been handled the first couple weeks of the season. Look, I played in a different era. You know, they were allowed to hit us, and they tried to hit us, and they tried to hurt us. This year is completely different. The money is different. The name recognition is maybe even more significant than it was when I was playing. But it's really you got to be careful around the quarterbacks. I just thought that referee yesterday, I forget his name, and I think it was a rookie referee.
Adrian Hill, first year.
I thought he was terrible. And I think both coaches were frustrated by it. And I know one thing, Vic Fangio, after the game, was just livid. You could see it in his eyes. You could hear it in his voice, and I don't blame him.
Boomer, is Eli Manning done as the starter, or should he be?
He should be. You know, this has been going on for about 6 or 7 years out here in New York, and I'm not saying anything here in Chicago that I don't say on my morning radio show in New York. I can tell you that. You know, I opened the show this morning by saying, you know, what are the Giants trying to do? What are they? Where are they going? What's going on? This is like 6 years in a row, or six out of the last seven, where they have started 0-2, and it looks listless, lifeless. And the only constant throughout this whole thing has been the quarterback. And, you know, he's on his third coach now in the last 4 years, and it's just obvious to everybody, but yet the Giants stick with him. But for me, you don't draft a kid number 6 overall and don't play him. And that's why I think Daniel Jones needs to be in there, should be in there, and they should move on. I mean, the Giant fans are booing the team. I would say probably a good 35,000 fans left that game before the third quarter was over. And money speaks. And if people aren't in the seats and they don't have a quarterback that they believe in and they know that their season's pretty much over, you might as well give it to the 6th overall draft pick, Daniel Jones. So I've been an advocate for Daniel. The moment they chose him, they should have let Eli go and they should have played him. And they should have started the season that way. At least that would have gotten people a little bit excited about looking at something differently.
Is your suspicion Ben Roethlisberger retires?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's going to want to end like this. You know, he's got a lot of money tied up in that contract, and I think there's a $55 million cap hit against the Steelers if he does not come back and play. I know he has an injury guarantee, but that would pay for him next year, but then there is a salary cap problem that could arise out of it if he does retire. I don't think that's going to happen, because if he does, then I also believe that the Steelers would be looking to recoup some of the bonus money they gave him. So this is one of those weird things, and I don't think he'll want to go out that way, but I guess it all depends on how significant the surgery is.
And then last one, what are you expecting from the other quarterback in your city, Sam Darnold, tonight? Because I think he's another QB Bears fans would rather have than Mitch.
Well, you know, he's going to be on the bed tonight because he's got mononucleosis.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Remember, kissing
don't forget
disease.
That one.
Yeah.
So he's not really going to be involved. It'll be Trevor Siemian starting for the Jets tonight. But here's the thing about Sam. I do believe Sam is going to be a terrific young quarterback. And I think the diagnosis of mononucleosis made me truly understand why he played the way he did last week. He wasn't right, and you could see it. But we probably won't see him for another 5 weeks or so. They're going to make sure that virus is out of him. They're going to make sure that his spleen is not enlarged. And they're going to make sure that he has all of his energy back and that he feels good. Because if you put him out there, he better be able to protect himself. And you got to make sure that he's 100% totally.
Good stuff, Boomer. We'll talk to you after the Bears game against Washington. Thank you.
Thanks, Boomer.
All right, guys. Good luck. Hang in there, boys.
Take care,
yeah.
Man.
Okay.
Yeah. We need it. That's Boomer Esiason with us, the hour brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. With the conversation with Boomer brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears.
It does, to a very large degree, feel like a loss. Hang in there, guys, he says at the back end.
Yeah. I will say, His argument or his perspective, I do think, should make you feel a little better. And it's definitely glass half full. But basically what he's saying is, it's not that Nagy has given up on Trubisky, why he called the game that way. He called the game that way because of the circumstance and opponent, coordinator, location,
right,
and all of that stuff. And so he comes back this next week. I think he'll be back to running the offense where you rely on the quarterback to win.
Yeah, what'd he say, 250 yards?
250-plus yards.
250-plus. Put that in your pipe and smoke.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if that's a one-game aberration, you can at least say that that's situational, as opposed to...
I'm all for making the guy's life simple. I'm all for that. I still think you got to stretch the field a little bit more, and you got to be willing to go vertical. When you've got third and long, I'm so tired. Everybody is. We're so tired of seeing the ball thrown horizontally. God, throw the ball downfield.
That would be
good.
Find
somebody who can play tight end, too.
Yeah, and Texters, you're right. I deserve all of the criticism. Boomer was very generous to me with how I framed that Sam Darnold question.
It's not a big deal. It's who's starting for the Jets against the Cleveland Browns tonight, for crying out loud.
Well, yeah, and really I was looking for a Darnold v. Mitch question, and I framed it through the prism of tonight's game like a moron. So, yeah, that's
okay.
On me.
That's all right. But boy, the Bears fans are quick to jump on him, too, about the Chubb penalties. Hey, we had two of those go against us, loser.
Yeah.
Yeah. We acknowledged that earlier in the conversation. Maybe you didn't catch that.
Well, and we were talking about
it. Lit up a ref.
Yeah. Oh, Adrian Hill.
Adrian Hill gets barbecued.
Great rules guy. Hey, great rules guy.
Or not. Well, they're going to have to do something with that rule on the two-point conversion. There's a lot of uncertainty over what happened yesterday after the penalty on the Bears, and then the Broncos take a penalty, or vice versa, sorry, and the ball winds up getting spotted at the one.
Yeah, from the original spot of where you were going to go for two.
Right. Prior to that, the ball, I think, was sitting at the south, I don't know, half the distance with 3.5-yard line. Would that have where it should have been spotted?
Well,
Do you know?
They spotted it correctly because it's an untimed down where you have the choice. The explanation from Blandino was something to the effect of, because it's an untimed down, you can enforce that penalty from the original spot where you would have gone for two. And that's what made Vic want to put his offense back on the field.
And Blandino's explanation ran into the Bears' final offensive play, too.
It did.
Get off my screen, Blandino!
As much as
I love those who appreciate the zebra profession, game on!
I was actually impressed with a couple of coaches yesterday. Neither one got the result that they wanted, but both Doug Marrone in the Jaguars-Texans game and then Fangio in Broncos-Bears go for two and the win. Jaguars get stopped. Broncos end up converting it because of the Buster screen offsides. Neither of them end up winning the game, but I think in both situations, playing for the win on one play from 2 yards away is the right thing to do, as opposed to playing for overtime and bringing a coin toss into play. So I love that they were erring on the side of aggression.
I know that you're that kind of a guy. I am kicking the point and fighting to, live another day.
Yeah, I was impressed with it, although, man, there were still some just baffling decisions over the weekend. I assume you did not watch much of Pitt-Penn State this weekend?
I didn't see any of it. The only college I watched a little bit of the Notre Dame thing because I thought I was watching Patrick Holmes playing. His score just keeps running up, and I saw your Syracuse Orange.
Yeah, they did not cover. Clemson took care of that one pretty easily.
That Clemson quarterback needs to get his ass at the pro level next year. He took some brutal shots in that game. Some of them after the whistle, too.
And he's not eligible until after next season. He's got to play another year of college football after this one. Or sit out.
Sit out.
Yeah, maybe.
Sit out.
He might. He might. Or go
he
take.
He took some horrible shots, man.
Or go take $20 million from the XFL for a year. But in the Pitt-Penn State game, Pat Narduzzi, the old Michigan State defensive coordinator, Pitt's head coach, they're a 17-point underdog, in-state rival, Pitt-Penn State. There's 5 minutes left in the game. They're down 17-10. It's fourth and goal from the 1.5-yard line, and he lines up to kick the field goal to go down 17-13, and the guy promptly kicks the ball into the line of scrimmage. Incredible. Incredible cowardice in that game. And Cliff Kingsbury, 3 field goals from 24 yards and in with Kyler Murray. Like, I don't know what these guys are doing.
I saw you tweeting about that.
It's just so conservative. Yeah. Like Kyler Murray's got 350 yards passing in the game, and you don't trust him to get 2 yards. You're not going to win. You're not going to win when you're a 13-point underdog on the road, settling for field goals.
Could the Bears get to the Super Bowl this year if Kyler Murray were their quarterback? Just a thought.
Yes.
You think they could? You think really?
He's better than Mitch right now.
Whew.
He's the first rookie to debut with 300 plus yards passing in back-to-back games since Cam Newton. He looks awesome, and he's really damn fun.
Yeah. I didn't see any of the Cardinals.
I watched a lot of that game.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That game right up my alley. Just trick plays and misdirection and quarterbacks running all over the place, throwing the ball down the field. Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald both over 100 yards receiving.
That's your perfect game, and I got my perfect game in Indianapolis, Tennessee, because it was pretty much between the tackles. They were done in about 2 hours and 20 minutes.
It's a soccer game.
Speakers on fire.
Yeah, that was exciting. You want to talk about your ref and the rule situation the NFL has? Because Tanny put a little something-something together.
Absolutely.
And I think this league's got a real problem on its hands. That's coming up on The Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Personal foul, roughing the passer. Defense, number 91. Half the distance and goal from the previous spot.
Costly foul, and Matt Nagy doesn't agree with it, and... big penalty.
Yeah, I don't like taking, contact out of a contact sport. You're legislating it out. Did you drive with your full body weight? Now we've got the subjective nature of that. You don't know, as you wrap that guy up, if he still has the ball or not. I just don't know what you want these guys to do. And if you don't wrap them up and they spin out, then you're the guy in the meeting getting chewed out. I agree with Matt Nagy. I think it's a garbage call, but that's the world we live in today.
Mark Schlereth, Dick Stockton, NFL audio there from Fox. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, have Michigan State Saturday at 11. Tickets on sale at nusports.com. I was thinking that game was right up your alley. Lots of refs and lots of defense.
Too much refs. I hate bad calls. You know me. I'm an advocate of the profession, but I also love defense.
That's true.
I don't think any what Schlereth said was 100% correct. You have no idea when you're in that position if the quarterback still has the football or not. That's terrible. Did you notice Stockton had to interrupt Adrian Hill before Schlereth interrupted him? He didn't even wait until the official was done with the announcement, and that piece of sound weird. He was still giving his explanation for it. And Stockton just chimes in.
I don't know how many times you're going to interrupt me. But yeah, it's that. Listen, it'll happen. And that Adrian Hill, man, he had a lot of mic time yesterday. He was like the fourth member of the booth.
He did. still first down. Kind of animated. They don't like it when the refs are animated. They don't want the refs to be a part of the show.
So we game, not a me game,
that
being a referee. Say,
yeah, right, right. That's what it is.
All right, so Tanny, because we love the men in the white hat here, and Mike Pereira on our show last week said that Adrian Hill was a big rules guy.
Great rules guy. Hey, great rules guy.
Which, you know, makes sense for officials whose job it is to enforce the rules. We wanted to relive Adrian Hill's day, Bears and Broncos.
We got a man who wore the white hat.
Mike Pereira, the rules analyst at Fox Sports.
Give us a little bit on Adrian Hill, who will referee the Bears game.
A great rules guy. A great rules guy. They could have used him last night.
And a flag is down.
Yeah, they really need to pick this flag up.
Adrian Hill, 10th season in the NFL, first as a referee.
After the play, personal foul, unnecessary roughness, defense.
I think it's a ridiculous call.
I agree with you.
Holding defense. Number 95. Holding offense. Number 72. Pass interference. Defense. Holding offense. Number 72. Holding offense. Number 72. Illegal use of the hands. Offense. Number 72. Holding offense. Number 72. 10-yard penalty during the kick. Holding against a receiving team. Holding offense. Number 72. Before the pass, holding defense. Number 26. Holding offense. Number 65. Personal foul, roughing the passer. Defense. Number 91. After this is a goal from the previous spot.
Costly foul, and Matt Nagy doesn't agree with it.
I agree with Matt Nagy. I think it's a garbage call, but that's the world we live in today.
Illegal use of the hands. Defense. Holding offense. Number 65. Offside. Defense. Personal foul. Roughing the passer. Defense. 12 men in the huddle. Offense.
A great rule guy.
It's good, and the Bears win it.
17 penalties in all. 17 of them. Now, we all think there are a few of them that shouldn't have been called, but still, far too much laundry on the field. And that, I'm glad I heard that. We have been on the air for an hour and 36 minutes, and we have yet to mention 12 men in the huddle. Oh, my goodness.
Rough,
are
man.
You serious, fellas? Come on!
4th and 15, that play when Mitch stood up and got it to Robinson for the 25-yard gain.
There were a handful of 4th and longs completed yesterday on both sides, and just, not acceptable by either side. And I give the Bears defense a little bit of a break. They gave up a 4th and 10. They gave up a 4th and 3 late.
But one to Sanders.
When you're on the field 6 minutes longer, 20 more plays than the opposition – You have to burn a timeout because Khalil Mack can't breathe. That's because you're on the field all damn day because your offense is 3 of 11 on third down attempts.
So we talked with Mike Pereira and last week about how it was a relatively clean week one of the NFL season with the new pass interference rule. I'm wondering now that we have seen week two with this rule if the NFL is going to rethink some things, because I think that they've created a problem here. They had the problem with the call in the NFC Championship game, right? The blown pass interference that impacts the NFC title game. So they create a rule to fix that problem. Pass interference is now reviewed whether it's called or not. But in the process, they create a whole bunch of other problems, which is, like, why isn't roughing the passer reviewable? Roughing the passer can be a judgment call. It can be as significant as pass interference, right? You don't think the Broncos last 2 minutes would have liked for that roughing the passer that Chubb had on Trubisky to be reviewable? You could argue changes the outcome of the game. Go back to Thursday night. Panthers-Bucks. There's a pass interference call that's challenged. There's no pass interference on the play, but there is illegal contact on the play, clear as day in the review, but illegal contact, not reviewable. So we stop a game, we show the refs missing a call, we're not able to enforce it, and we can't go. Saints-Rams yesterday, Cam Jordan picks up the fumble, runs 80 yards for the touchdown, whistle blows the play dead, not reviewable. So I think what the NFL has done here is they've backed themselves into a corner where they either have to say penalties are reviewable or no penalties are reviewable, because as the rule is currently written, you have said that pass interference, it's more important to get that one right than any other calls in the game, which doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Not when first downs are being afforded to the team that is the beneficiary of a roughing the passer call on a play that otherwise would have been an incompletion in a fourth down punting situation.
And this is what I said after the NFC Championship game last year. I normally hate slippery slope arguments.
Bill Vinovich's crew, by the way, for that one.
Thank you. Roby Coleman, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you do? Would you rather open Pandora's box completely and say all penalties, if you've got a challenge or it's the last 2 minutes, reviewable, treat them all like pass interference, and so then you could have guys calling, you know, throwing challenge flags for holding or roughing the passer or illegal hands to the face or whatever? Or would you rather go back to how it was last year and say no penalties are reviewable and we'll just live with human error? Because I don't think you can continue to thread the needle like they're doing right now.
It's inconsistent, because now something that is a judgment call is up for review while other things aren't.
Exactly.
There needs to be some consistency here. I suppose if you're going to give pass interference, why wouldn't you do it? It's similar to roughing the passer. It's a judgment call. Whether a guy drives him in, and looking at a replay might give you a better idea as to whether he actually did. Was he finishing his tackle, or did he give him a little extra? Give him the business, as one of the old-time officials said years ago.
Yeah, and I just, you know where I stand on this. I'd go back to how it was. I don't think that we should be able to retroactively throw penalties through slow-motion video review. I just think that that is an unnecessary application of the technology that we have. Reasonable minds can disagree on that, and that's totally fine. But, man, I just thought it got ugly this week. That Saints-Rams thing, there's no replay that's solving that problem. A ref just, he messed up. He blew the whistle. Like, Dean Blandino was on that broadcast 2 seconds after it happened, being like, right. Oh, they're coached not to do that. Like, so there's never going to be perfection. It's unattainable with the men in the white hat, that craft that you love. So I feel like you just got to accept a little bit of human error here and move on.
Yeah, I don't. I think if you're going to give it to one, you know, in one situation, then you have to give it to all or none. I mean, go back and retract that next year on the pass interference. If you're not going to give other judgment calls an opportunity to be reviewed, it has to be consistent. I don't know why you'd pick one and not another.
That's what they've done. Right now, there is one penalty and one penalty only that is able to be reviewable. And I just...
Judgment calls, yes.
And I don't see how that makes any sense.
No, it doesn't.
In college, you can review targeting because the penalty that comes with it is ejection. So right. That makes sense. If you're going to kick a guy out of a game, you should be damn sure that you're ejecting him for the right reason. So I got no problem with that if the penalty is that severe. But when it's 15 yards, like, what do we really want that? Do we really want coaches throwing challenge flags for holding? I would say no.
Again, what does it matter what they're throwing the challenge flag, though? If they only have X number of challenges, why do you care what it is?
Because I just think that you can game the system, and in the last 2 minutes, you could say, hey, it happens on every play. And then it's like a basketball game. And I hate the end of basketball games. Because last 2 minutes, everything's reviewable. It's automatic.
Right.
So if there's ever a borderline pass interference call.
Is that why you hate the last 2 minutes of a basketball game, or is it the timeouts and the free throws?
Well, but the timeouts and the free throws are unavoidable, right? If there's a foul, you get to shoot free throws. If you save your timeouts, it's there. So adding in the replay makes the last 2 minutes that are already long, it makes it interminable. So in this situation...
It's your game, man.
No, I love it, but I love it for its flow and its rhythm. And then in the last 2 minutes, they take away the flow and the rhythm. And in football, I just think if you follow this to its logical conclusion, we are going to be at a point where every penalty is reviewable. And then I think that's going to make the last minutes of games just miserable.
Yeah, it certainly would have the potential to do that. But it hasn't gotten too crazy out of hand right now, other than when they're reviewing possession and turnovers. Those seem to be the ones in the last 2 minutes where we're always going to be delayed. I haven't seen where they're stopping unnecessarily for a lot of things this year.
No,
in 2 weeks.
No,
have you?
Neither have I. I'm just pointing out, just from those three instances, right? Saints-Rams, the Panthers Bucks, which was a national TV game that I think most of us watched, when they went to challenge one thing, saw another clear penalty that should have been thrown, but they weren't able to throw the challenge flag for it. Like, that just doesn't, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right?
Like, we're reviewing this play to see if there was a penalty. There was a penalty, but we're not allowed to call that penalty on this review. That doesn't seem too logical. And then the Bears-Broncos thing. That's the last 2 minutes of a game. It's a judgment call. It impacted the outcome of the game, but it's not reviewable.
Since we're on zebras, since we started the show, several people have gotten to us, and this guy just a couple of minutes ago, wanting to know why a whistle was blown on Kyle Fuller's interception. He stepped out of bounds, right? Or is it down by contact?
It looks like there was contact down when he went to the ground on the catch.
I thought his right foot might have touched the chalk. One of the two, yeah. If you're touching another player, that's considered contact. You're down.
It was one of those things where, was it absolutely 100% definitive? I didn't think so. But he was ruled down, and there certainly wasn't definitive proof to the contrary that he should have been able to get up and run. So I thought that was just a hell of a play by Fuller. I didn't think the Bears got screwed in that particular instance. People want to weigh in on the game and where this team goes from here. We'll do top NFL takeaways, and hopefully the Bears have a kicker. It's McNeil and Parkins on a Built for Tough Bears Monday on The Score.
And as the Pats realign, they have Brown and Gordon to the left. Three receivers right, including White flexed out. They spread it against the Dolphins with an empty set from the gun. Ball on the near hash, the left hash. Brady takes the snap and retreats. He looks left. He fires the back shoulder.
Yeah!
Brown! Touchdown, Patriots! Inside the near left pylon.
Welcome to New England, kid. What a throw by the quarterback to the back shoulder. And stupidly, the Dolphins go right back to bump and run. Single high coverage, they motion the back out. Antonio Brown draws bump and run from the slot. Brady signals to the head. He checks the playoff and throws a dagger to that orange pylon. That's how you run the back shoulder fade, folks. It's called elite talent right there.
How'd you like seeing Antonio Brown in a Patriots uniform this weekend?
Patriots were sleepwalking en route to a 43-0 win over the Dolphins. Who's the gravelly Scott Farrell sounding guy in the booth doing the analysis?
Scott Zolak.
Zolak.
Scott Zolak? Wow, a quarterback?
How about that?
Sounds more like a tackle, doesn't he? Sounds like a meatball. A
lot of packs of cigarettes in his day, maybe.
Exactly.
It's a hard living.
Scott Zolak? Okay.
There it is. Listen, survival.
That play will be on every highlight for the rest of the week.
The rest of the year, Bob.
The year, Bob.
Get it right.
Have another sip, Bob.
I love how condescending he is with his Bob there. It's like Bernstein with Bob callers. So come on, Bob.
I didn't lay the 19 in the Patriots game.
I didn't either.
I stayed off of it.
The Cowboys are a 21-point favorite next week against the Dolphins, which I don't have the stomach for it. Miami is, they're not trying as an organization. They could lose every game by 40. 31 teams are trying to win. One is not.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess until they cover a spread, you might as well bet against them, right?
Yeah, or stay away. Yeah. If you have a policy of not laying that big of a number in the NFL.
I typically don't lay 19 on the road. Maybe at home, but never on the road. That was the biggest road spread ever. The Bears are, what, 6.5 point, 7 point favorites over Washington, the early line I think I saw today?
I saw 6.5, but then I
six
saw,
and a half.
I thought that it was coming down a bit.
Is it?
But,
yeah, people have been thinking a little bit more.
Yeah,
maybe not.
I can check to see what it is most recently. But, all the way down to 4.
Who pulls this up for you? Did you do that yourself?
Yeah, Bears minus 4.
4 now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 4.5 in some places, but 6.5 was ridiculous for this offense.
Yeah, we should have jumped on the Redskins right then and there.
They've scored one touchdown.
And they're going on the road to play on Monday Night Football.
We have Cubs injury news. Anthony Rizzo will be in a boot for 5 to 7 days. Unsure on a timetable after that if he'll be able to make it back in time for the regular season. Craig Kimbrell will throw a simulated game tomorrow.
It's all right. They'll be just fine without Tony for a little while. The playoffs are the playoff game against the Nationals is a good 2.5 weeks away, right? I got the 16th of September on my calendar here. So they're not going to need him until the 1st or 2nd of October. So they're fine. Just take your time, Tony.
They're only two games back of the Cardinals.
I know.
They've got seven with the Cardinals left.
That's when your moon pounding comes.
And, well, the Cardinals have Strasburg, Scherzer, Corbin the next 3 days. They get all three of the aces for the Nationals, and you get the Reds. Mm-hmm. So keep it going. Maybe you could be tied with the Cardinals by the time that series starts this
weekend.
How
much of, and be truthful now. You usually are. I've not caught you telling any false witness yet. How much Cubs did you watch over the four-game win streak? How many innings did you consume?
Does Top TV count? Like, it's just on, but I'm not really watching?
Well, you can give me
Or do I have to hear Len Casper's voice?
Whatever you want. However you want to describe it.
If I have to hear Len Casper's voice, less than two innings.
Okay.
But if it's on.
If you have to hear it, you're out.
Well, no, it's not about that. It was just like I was watching football.
The way you said it sounded like it was.
It's not about Len.
Even Saturday, you're college boy over the Cub?
Yeah, well, it was college boy, and it was the Club.
Oh, you got that bet with the wife for the Syracuse Clemson game, right?
Exactly. That's our day. So we do things together. We spend time together. We have some friends over for the game. We have fun.
Tell me more.
That's just our day. We bet a steakhouse dinner and then a little something. On the Syracuse.
If we ever
Clemson
did
game.
A segment where people could ask us anything they wanted to,
it'd be amazing.
It would be really good. But then they asked that question once a long time ago. See, you miss a little, you miss a lot. Asked and answered.
A triple for me, triple for you. Yeah, whatever it ends up being. But she's a good sport about it. She lays the points. So, because she knows it's not fair. We can't do money line bets when it's Clemson football against Syracuse.
No, that wouldn't work.
So she wakes up the day of the game and she says, how many points am I giving you for our annual bet?
I'm more interested in money line bets in the future.
You got the stomach for it?
2-1 on the year. And, I had Seattle yesterday in Pittsburgh. Also had the Vikings, which was a nice little payoff that should have come home, but Kirk Cousins quarterbacks their team, and he doesn't win big games. Even though they rallied from a 21-0 deficit, battled right in it, and then Kevin Stefanski, their offensive coordinator, gets stupid and starts throwing the ball.
I watched the noon games with a buddy of mine, and he had the Bears -1 because he line shops, and he got them earlier in the week. So I went 5-0-1 yesterday,
Beautiful.
And my tie, the push, was on the Bears I had them at -2. I had the bad line. He had the good line. So there we go. When we talk about we should be focusing on this earlier in the week.
I know.
That's the right there.
Yeah.
That's the difference between a win and a push.
I should have jumped on the Redskins at 6.5 at 7:30 this morning.
Do the Bears have a kicker? We have some audio treats to tell the story next on The Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.